Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
County Commissioner and candidate for Mayor Tammy Sawyer, tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes with the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us. I am joined tonight by Tammy Sawyer, County Commissioner, candidate for mayor. Thanks for being here again.
Thank you for having me.
And Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. Let me first say that we are happy to have you here and to talk about your campaign. We have reached out to Jim Strickland, current mayor, who's running for re-election. He'll be on the show in 2 weeks. We also reached out to former mayor, Willie Harrington. He has so far declined to be on the show. So we'll get started. We'll talk about issues, talk about some of the things you've been campaigning on. One of the things I want to start with, which is, I guess, an issue in the campaign, but also was a bit of news recently when CNN commentator Angela Rye came to town, spoke at a campaign event supporting your candidacy. And she made some headlines by calling Jim Strickland a racist. Do you think that Jim Strickland is a racist?
Thanks for asking. You know, first, I'd just like to say thanks for having me and the opportunity to come and speak today when so many debates have been canceled, and being able to get what is important to us in this race out is very important, and I hope we get more opportunities like this. But to answer your question, Angela Rye came as a friend and as a supporter. What we need to remember is that the mayor disrespected Angela when she was paid to come to Memphis and speak during MLK 50. He chose not to greet her. He chose to walk out of the event. And then he went on TV and said, "I don't know who she is." In a world where we are continuously watching Black women silenced, it is not surprising that Angela took offense to that and feels that a mayor who continuously upholds systemic racist policies, that she would feel those things about him. And so—
Go ahead, finish it up, sure.
For me, Angela has her opinion about the mayor, and I feel that she has a right to that opinion. As far as I'm concerned, what I see in the current administration is a mayor who chooses continuously to silence Black people, especially Black women, who continuously uses his administration to uphold the systemic oppression that we see rampant throughout Memphis. And is not, as we would say, anti-racist. Great book out right now, How to Be Anti-Racist by Ibram Kendi, and I would recommend so many people look at that. And I think that the discussion needs to be about how are the policies that are being upheld about by this administration, how are those funneling racism in the city?
And that's what I was interrupting you to yeah. ask. What are examples of those policies that you feel are yeah. racist policies, upholding racism and suppressing especially Black women?
Absolutely. So, on the oppressing Black women front, you know, personally as a Black woman, I've been on the side of surveillance, of being silenced by this administration without any reason for that. There's an article written, really great article this past weekend by Bill himself, but, you know, I was not someone who laid on the mayor's lawn. I was not someone who's ever enacted violence or threatened violence against the mayor. I've actually suffered from violence threatened against me myself. And, you know, even when I think about this entire story of the mayor being the one who removed Confederate statues, but the city provided tactical support and spent dollars to escort the Sons of the Confederate Veterans back and forth to Forest Park, to the point where they actually said thank you to Mayor Jim Strickland and the Memphis Police Department for, you know, your great support of us. In the meantime, today it's been announced that Crime Stoppers is giving awards for people who were involved in the Frazier unrest. You know, at a time when we are realizing that people are taking to streets, people are continuously protesting because of this continuous issues, and we're allowing the police department to give money to arrest people who were in the Frazier protest. And so it's a continuous disconnect in where people of color are saying they need support. This is a mayor who stayed silent when 630 Latinx people were removed from Mississippi last week, when we have the fastest growing Hispanic population in the state. And, you know, it was said that there were probably at least 150 families who were looking for shelter in Memphis that next night because they were afraid that their homes would be raided as well. This is a mayor who has stayed silent and won't say the names of Black people who were killed during police violence. You know, even when you stand with police officers, which as mayor is your right and duty to not say the names of those who have been killed, you know, there's a whole movement, say their name. And we could go on and on and on. But what we have to do is disrupt racism. What we have to do is be an active disruptor of these systems. You know, just this week, 6 schools were closed in the first week of school due to either power being out or air conditioning being out. And that's the first week of school. It is ground zero for kids building a foundation. It's tied to racism is because Shelby County Schools is 90% Black.
Let me interrupt a little bit. We got 25 minutes.
Okay.
So we'll definitely have a conversation about these issues. As mayor of Memphis, and if you were to win, and I mean the office you're running for, you don't have any authority. The mayor does not have any authority over what goes on in Mississippi and with ICE in Mississippi. And it doesn't have really any authority, and people lose track of this. But the mayor of Memphis has no real authority over what happens in the school system, the Shelby County school system. So how would you as mayor have handled those two things differently?
So yes, the mayor doesn't have any authority over what happens in Mississippi, but Mississippi is 2 minutes away from here. And when things happen around us, when we're silent about those things without realizing the terror that is enacted here at home, how many people, as I shared, were impacted when that happened? How many people were afraid right here? And even when there have been ICE raids here in Memphis, we have not seen the administration speak out. Okay. Even when people have actually called on the city of Memphis to, even before, it was banned by the state to have a sanctuary city. The administration was asked to name the city a sanctuary city. And all the mayor would say, we welcome everyone to the city.
And then
on the schools, the city doesn't have oversight, no. But if you look at the municipalities around us, they don't have oversight either. And they continuously put funding into, they get city funding, they get county funding, they get state and federal dollars as
like
well.
Bartlett or Colleyville. Those are independent school districts.
They're independent school districts, but our kids are competing for the same jobs. Our kids are looking for the same opportunities. Only 1/3 of kids who graduated from high school in 2019 were ready for college or work. Yeah. You know, and so that needs to be important. When we're asking businesses to come here and 2/3 of our, we're not replenishing our workforce by 2/3. That's important. And there is an issue where if we can only give $0 to our kids' education, how do we tell them that they matter?
All right, let me bring Bill in.
Commissioner, is it your view then that the mayor's race, the campaign, the discussion of the issues is part and parcel of what we see happening nationally around issues that are of nationwide importance, or is it just about what happens within the borders of Memphis?
So I think that national issues, we are ground zero for a lot of national issues. You know, we ping on all of these radars for high poverty, high segregation, lack of transportation, you know, lack of educational inequity. And we need to be figuring out how to solve that. And I think people are watching Memphis to see how we're going to solve that. You know, throughout the South, people are trying different things. And it seems that we're not really trying anything except basic leadership.
Are people who are trying to make up their mind in this mayor's race, do you think that there is that they experience some discomfort when they look at issues like roads, things like that, what's happening with Shelby County mm-hmm. schools or any of the other school districts? Is there some discomfort that is inherent in trying to make that decision and also to reconcile what happens here with what happens nationally on all of the issues that you've talked about?
Do I see people experiencing that discomfort?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that we're definitely connecting the dots for people about how what's happening in Memphis matters with what's happening nationally. You know, for example, when Jeff Sessions came here and people asked that the administration not meet with Jeff Sessions, the administration said, of course, we're going to meet with Jeff Sessions. He's the attorney general. But what happened out of that meeting was not taking the voices of the Memphians who were concerned about his record and Sessions' policies. But here we are, and now out of that meeting, We've lost federal monitoring of Department of Justice, and just reported in the last month that we've had 63% more juveniles arrested a year after that monitoring was taken away. You can connect the dots between what's happening nationally, who's appointed in certain administrations, who gets to come to Memphis, who we meet with, and what we do when we meet with them. So my thing is not that the mayor has the ability to change things nationally, but the mayor can be an influencer for our city, right, and an advocate. We need someone who's going to advocate as well as lead administratively. And so being, again, this basic leadership, and then the basics that you're providing aren't reaching everyone. So even if you're not talking nationally, I represent District 7, and I drive down major streets that haven't been paved and continue to have potholes.
Let's come back to and give you a chance to have a glass of water there. And you want to stay with you, Bill, on this issue?
Yeah. We talked about this a bit on the politics podcast, and that is kind of the thing about there is momentum that the mayor's advocating, and then there is, and you even have used the word disruption. Is that the ultimate choice? Is that the choice that you feel like is over all of these issues going into the mayor's race?
So I do believe we have to disrupt the status quo. The momentum that is being seen is seen for a just few. Tens of millions of dollars for parking garages while schools are being closed. If someone was advocating for the children, the Black and Brown children of Memphis, they would see an urgency to put city dollars in ways that could help education. $19 million, I believe, for a new tennis court. I played tennis. I grew up playing tennis. But the majority of the kids in Memphis can't get to Leftwich. And so we continuously put these things forward without addressing the issues that are the basic support services that people need. And I'll let you get to your next question.
So to just talk about that for a second, then in terms of the voters, going back to the voters who are kind of still making up their mind about this. Do you look at the election as where your stand on the issues is going beyond the mayor's race? I mean, obviously, if you become mayor, there are changes that are involved with that. But is there a larger movement that depends on what happens in the mayor's race in terms of how many votes are there, in terms of what the support looks like?
I do think that that matters. I think that, we have all kinds of positions. We saw a pink and blue wave last year with the county and state races. How does that continue? How do people continue to have the support to advocate? A lot of people don't think that they can run for office and be more progressive, can show people-centered issues, that they have to go with the usual course, that they have to be big business, that they have to be silent about, the more challenging issues that we're facing. So what I think that this race represents for so many is the possibility that we can have a mayor who will speak to the issues that we're facing every day, that the parents who are struggling to get to work on old transportation systems will hear somebody who's going to advocate for them while running for mayor and while being mayor. And so I think that this shows an ability for, moving forward, what the political world of Memphis looks like.
It's about midway through the show, so 13 yep. minutes left. Some of these things you're talking about, you mentioned transportation, you mentioned schools, you mentioned paving, mm-hmm. and then you mentioned priorities of where spending is happening.
Right.
The city of Memphis has a finite budget, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and so how do you take the money it's spending? Where would you take that money from? Would that be from police? Would that be from fire? Those are really the biggest expenses right. on the operating side. Would it be tax increases to fund increased spending at the school level? How on a dollars and cents basis would you implement these things you're talking about?
Right. So as you know, we have about a $750 million budget here in Memphis. And so the way that budget has been decided has been by the administration and influencers of that administration, Memphis Tomorrow, people who have, a lot of access in that way. What we are looking to do is to present the budget to the people and have participatory budgeting, meaning that we'll take that budget out into the community and say, how would you slice up this pie, North Memphis, South Memphis, whatever. So I rarely say, I'm going to do 10% here, I'm going to take this from here, because I want to hear what the people have have to say first. I do believe that what the outcome will be is that we go from $0 invested in K through 12 education to more. I'm not saying that we'll increase taxes on day one or even in month four. I think that the first year I want to see how we chop up the budget based on the input from the community. And I think that the community will speak up in a way where they believe a lot of the same things, because we built this idea based on people's input.
Where is the, I mean, to some degree, that isn't the city council meant to be that representative of the people? Where does the city council fit in that conversation you just described?
Well, what's exciting when you, Matt, talk about the political climate is that you have a city council that could be a whole new city council, you know, in a lot of ways. And so participatory budgeting has happened in a lot of cities across the country, and city councils play a role in that. I think that most leadership that's rising, or, you know, that is a part of modern leadership, has no problem allowing people to be a part of that process.
And you talked about the possibility of tax increases. That definitely gets people's ears going. Certainly the business community says we already have a huge tax, you know, burden. It's higher than anywhere else in the state, and it's a real drag on growth. But you are saying that a property tax increase is on the table? Or I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I'm saying that there's no increase that's off the table.
Okay.
I'm not saying there's no taxes.
We've mentioned crime, and obviously I mentioned in the context of the budget, it's one of the police office, the police force is one of the biggest expenses for the city government. Mayor Strickland has ran on and in his administration, and now in his reelection campaign, has talked about rebuilding the police force and getting back up to a number, I think about 2,300. Mm-hmm. They're approaching 2,100. Mm-hmm. What is your take on the best way to fight crime, and how many police officers does the city of Memphis need?
So again, I think that 2,300, that we're getting to a point of being excessive. One model that I look at is Stockton, California, where they were able to freeze their hiring levels and hired a police chief, one who actually applied for the job here and wasn't selected, but hired a police chief who believed in community-oriented policing. And what they were able to do was not just reduce crime, but also reduce police-involved shootings. And they did that by building community and police trust, rebuilding the relationship on both sides so that police are in the community building with them, and the community is seeing them and trusting them, and that the crimes that are being our crimes are going down, and also the tension between the community and the police are going down as well. So those type of models are the things that we're looking at bringing. So again, you're asking for numbers. I don't have a number to give you.
So you're not opposed to 2,300, but what you want is a different philosophy.
What I want is a different philosophy, and what we won't be doing is the same, like more police on the ground. More police on the ground, by all research, even though the current administration says differently, does not include reduction of crime. Because most crime happens, if you shot me right now, the crime, it'd be a crime number, right? It's kind of crazy, but to illustrate the point, if you committed a crime against me right now, the crime's committed. Police have to be called to come in. There's no reduction of crime. They couldn't stop you from committing a crime. What we as a city need to do to reduce crime numbers, you have to get involved with intervention, prevention, and education. We're focused on the conviction, and so our numbers will never go down. More police officers equals more people being arrested for crimes.
Very visibly right now, and we had Police Director Rawlings on the show, I believe a week ago, or two, in the last 2 weeks. The effort around the highways to reduce mm-hmm. police shootings on the highways and road rage incidents. And so, you know, I mean, I think I sometimes have seen four or five yeah. police and state patrol and sheriffs right. on the highway. People have seen it everywhere. Is that to you an effective and appropriate approach to reduce this highway road rage crime?
That's tough to say. I do know that the police have, you know, had a high presence on the highway. I saw it driving here. I see it just about every day. And I've heard people say that, you know, it makes them feel safer. And I've heard people say it makes them feel less safer. But to the point of whether or not those police reduce crime, were arresting 80 people a week or something like that with having that many police officers on the highway. So there we go, where crime numbers are being increased. These are the type of arrests that would have never happened had more police not been on the highways, and they weren't the type of crimes where we would normally, you know, again, we're talking about reducing low-level violent, you know, crime offenses and talking about bail reduction and things like that, because that further disrupts, you know, our economic strength when we have so many people tied up in courts.
But it is, so before I go to Bill, Director Rawlings talked about it when he was on the show. I mean, they pull over a lot of people. If it's 80, I didn't know that, but it's a lot. But they're finding guns. They're finding people who are wanted on, he says, you know, they're finding a lot of guns, illegal guns. They're finding people who've been wanted on warrants. And then they're given a whole lot of tickets. Mm-hmm. Again, is that the right balance to, in our, do you think it's, are you saying you don't want people swept up in that unfairly? Or is it
I'm
a price you have to pay to reduce this highway crime?
I think that there is a better balance. I don't know that 80 people a week being arrested is the way to go, or is the reduction in crime. It's not reducing crime, because there we are adding numbers to our crime rate.
Okay. Bill, with 6 minutes left.
Also on the October ballot is a sales tax referendum, a half a cent to go for restoring benefits for police and firefighters that were cut 5 years ago in 2014 by the city. Do you have a position on that?
I would love that the police and firefighters, and when I met with police and fire, and when I've met with unions, as you know, endorsed by AFL-CIO, I've met with them and said that I want them to have a seat at the table. I want us to make sure that the people who work for the city get the benefits that they need, so that they continue to raise families, continue to take care of their grandchildren, continue to take care of their health. So this referendum, my position on it is that I think that there are good things that could be done with it, and I'd love to see what the people say about it.
Do you think that the benefits that police and fire have in the wake of these cuts from 2014, do you think the benefits are adequate in their present state?
I'm not a policeman or a fireman, and so, you know, I'm running on hearing what people are saying, bringing their voices to the table. Police and fire don't feel that their benefits are adequate. The union workers in other departments don't feel that their benefits or wages are adequate. And so if we have all of these folks saying we're not, you know, getting what we deserve being paid by the city, I would say no.
With 5 minutes left here, let's shift to, we've talked around this, some of this stuff is we've mentioned, but more explicitly about economic development and the business community. And, you know, a lot of debates over the years of where the spending goes, mm-hmm. and where incentives are used in
right.
terms of tax incentives. Do you think that, would you want, I mean, the city, most incentives go through EDGE, they also go through Downtown Memphis Commission. They are bodies that the mayor's office has some authority over, but not explicit authority
right.
over. Do you think the priorities for economic incentives over, say, the last 5 to 10 years have been, or let's focus on the Strickland administration, over the last 3+ years, do you think those incentives have been given out wisely?
I do not think so. I think we need more oversight. My belief is that if elected, we would freeze those initiatives while we do a full audit of the program. You know, I've attempted to have that conversation on the county commission side, and we were told, well, you're not our boss. The mayors are our bosses. And, you know, that doesn't give the community a more positive view of how these things are handed out. And so I think that what needs to happen is that we have to have a, you know, clauses that say you will pay a living wage, you will give benefits, you will treat your employees in a way where they're not, you know, dying in hot warehouses and, you know, so forth and so on, and you will be a part of the community. And people think that this will scare business off, and that's not the case. You know, Amazon said they weren't going to go to New York because New York was making demands of, you know, a certain, I guess, more progressive nature if they came. And Amazon is now in New York. And I think that what we see is that businesses are businesses for a reason. They're corporations. They're going to do the minimum possible to get into a city. We have the right to demand more for our people.
What about the argument, particularly for, say, the distribution business, mm-hmm. the warehousing type business,
yeah.
that they can go across the border and still take advantage of the Memphis airport or the Memphis Grizzlies or Memphis restaurants? I mean, they are effectively a part of Memphis, but they're living by an entirely different standard mm-hmm. by just going across the border. How do you handle that dynamic?
Well, first, you know, when you think about the distribution business, we are, as everyone knows today, facing a huge economic downturn. There's recession looming, and distribution businesses are actually on the way out. You know, even FedEx is showing very public struggles with how it moves forward in the future. By our estimates, 65% of the jobs that are available today won't be available in 5 years due to automation or some type of form of elimination. And so what I'm not trying to do is make it comfortable for distribution jobs to get away with the things they've been doing for a long time. What I'm trying to do is bring new industry here, such as tech, such as growing our entertainment and arts businesses, and making sure that we can get people into jobs that will last longer than 5 years, and that where they'll be able to grow, thrive, and earn the, what they deserve.
Examples of that, which is a minute and a half left, would probably be Indigo Ag, which has moved down from a very high tech company. FedEx Logistics is moving downtown a whole lot of, it's not the distribution center, mm-hmm. it's the knowledge workers, right. It's programmers. ServiceMaster moved downtown a few years ago, 700 people, many of them knowledge workers in IT.
But even
all those involved public incentives to get them, and all of those people who said, had they not got incentives, they would not have moved downtown.
Right. And I'm not saying no incentives. Okay. I'm saying that we need a full audit of the current program so that the programs can be more accountable. You said yourself that the programs aren't accountable to many people in a lot of ways.
Well, I didn't say that, but you did.
But okay.
Fair enough.
But also, when you also look at FedEx, most of the jobs, when you look at the jobs that they were bringing down to the logistics center into downtown, majority of those jobs are moving positions that are already out east. They're not hiring new people. And so again, when we're looking at the incentives that we're getting, what is the greater impact? And I think we have to do a better job with making sure that the impact is greater.
We have just 30 seconds. Is the focus on Tom Lee Park right now, $70 million, is that something you would want to disrupt? Or is that $70 million appropriate?
Is that something I would want to disrupt? Tom Lee Park is not a priority for my campaign.
Okay.
And what I think needs to happen again is there's not been a lot of accountability with Mayor Strickland's. You know, he does what he wants to do. He doesn't listen to people. The people of the city have said they had an issue, and I would listen to what the people want done.
All right, we will leave it there. Thank you. We had a whole lot more we couldn't get to. We appreciate your time immensely. Sorry I left you out there at the end there, Bill. But thank you all for joining us. Again, we've asked Dr. Harrington to come on. He's declined. Jim Strickland will be on in 2 weeks. Thanks for joining us. Good night.